Good morning, good morning.
A warm welcome to all the committee members as well as the department and the entities present. You are welcome to this Portfolio Committee of Labour meeting in this famous venue. And I'm
notorious
venue, and I'm wishing you strength during this meeting, and we hope we're going to have peace and calmness unlike the previous meeting. So on that tone, I would hand over to the committee secretary to take us through the agenda.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to members and the department. The agenda for today, Wednesday, the 23rd of May, 2018, is as follows. We'll receive apologies, followed by the adoption of the agenda, followed by a briefing on the third quarterly performance report, QPR3, of the Department of Labour and Entities. Then we will have a consideration of for adoption of the second quarterly performance report, QPR2, of the department and entities, and followed by a consideration of outstanding draft minutes of April month and closure. Chair, I only received three apologies from the members. The following members, Honorable Mutambi, Honorable Muteka, and Honorable Kowama. And also, we received a letter of apology tendered by the DG. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Sakasa. There we have it, members. The proposed agenda with the apologies in front of us. Can we have a mover and a seconder? Before we get a mover and a seconder, Honorable Members, I think before closure, we should just get a short briefing from the committee secretary in terms of our committee program so that we can see if we need to amend it and the way forward before we move, before we close this meeting. So with that inclusion, do we have a mover and a seconder? Honorable Martens is moving, the Honorable Tongwani is seconding. Then we move forward. We'll now hand over to the leader of the delegation of the department to take us through the briefing on the third quarterly performance report of the department and its entities in that order. Over to you, Mr. Morotova.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I will quickly introduce members of the delegation. I'm told that the Deputy Minister is on his way. He was just in another meeting on youth this morning. He'll be joining us as soon as they finish. Ms. Matapa is known to all of you. She was CEO of Productivity SA. Mr. Mafate, the Commissioner Compensation Fund, Ms. Melua, the Inspector General, Ms. Vigil Sifield, the Labour Policy and Industrial Relations DDG, and then we have Mrs. Mo Koliwani from the CCMA, and Honorable Chairperson, the CEO tendered his apology to the Director, Mr. Mohajan, because of other commitments. And she's accompanied by Mrs. Mbolekwa, who is the Chief Financial Officer. And on the far right is Mr. Slum Konundwang, the CEO of Productivity SA. And we also have an apology from the Compensation, Unemployment Insurance Fund Commission, Mr. Teboho Marubi, but Ms. Hilda Msongu is here, and we also joined by the Mr. Madoja, the Director, activism than DDG corporate services and quality. Also, when I introduced and the other side committee members that he worked with. I'm going to go through the report of the department, and I'm proceeding on the understanding or assumption that the report was circulated, and given the time constraints highlighted by the chairperson, I won't go through detailed slides. You can go to the Department of Labor's slide. Slide seven. What we are presenting during quarter three. Administration had a total of 4 indicators, and out of the 4, they managed to achieve 3, and the performance is at 75%. Inspection and enforcement had 4, they managed to achieve 3, performance is at 75%. And public employment services had 4, achieved 4, performance was at 100%. And labor policy had 5, and they achieved 2, and performance was at 40%, bringing the total of the department during quarter 3 performance to be 71%. Now, if we can go on to the next slide, slide number 8. Again, it's a comparative exercise giving you an illustration around where administration was during quarter 1, where they were at quarter 2, and the performance at quarter 3. And the same is done for inspection, public employment services, and labor policy, so that members can see how we arrived at 71%. During Q1, we're at 53% overall. Q2, we moved up to 56, and Q3 to 71%. Now, I'm going to take you through each program. You can go to administration. Slide number 13. In administration, the key issue that worried us was the fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 83,000 that we detected, and also the 116,000 irregular expenditure that was detected and reported. And the CFO will also deal with details with regard to the measures that we immediately took, the circumstances that led to the irregular expenditure, the corrective measures that we have put in place, and the disciplinary action that we have taken against the officials concerned. Can move on to. I think the rest of communication was achievement. If we can go straight to IES, slide number. Slide number 19. Now, on inspection and enforcement, the overall performance. Against the target of 43,000 inspections that were supposed to be conducted, you will notice that we have done quite well across all provinces, as 48,000 were were undertaken. And the employers that we found to have complied was in the region of 38,000, and 9,000 employers were found not to have complied. And in most cases, employers that are found to have not complied are the ones that normally serve various notices. On the Director General review, especially relating to employment equity, that this is where our major problem, this is where we had quite a number of major problems. We had a target of 352 companies to be reviewed. We reviewed 376, and in total, out of the companies that were reviewed, only 6 were compliant, and 370 companies were found not to have been compliant with the employment equity. Now, the Inspector General will give you a sense in terms of the actions that we've taken against those non-compliant employers. In some cases, we served them with notices. Some were taken to court, and some settled, while some cases are still pending. You can move on. Now, honourable members ask that we give details around, for instance, the sectors that we conducted the reviews, and that we give details with regard to areas of non-compliance. And slide 21 gives you the sectors, especially wholesale and retail, agriculture and manufacturing, where we conducted the DG reviews. And on the next slide, number 21, you find areas of non-compliance. In most cases, relating to the specifics relating to employment equity, if we can move. The next slide, number 24, gives you a sense in terms of the JSE listed companies that we targeted. We targeted 72, but because some were subsidiaries, in total we did 74 inspections or reviews, including the subsidiaries. Now, at the end, we ended up issuing 68 recommendations, and that companies that were failed to prepare their employment equity plans were 6. Those that didn't comply with the recommendations were 45, and those that did not comply with the DG recommendations were 23. And again, we have details with regard to employers that were subjected to prosecution, where we handed the matter over to the NPA, and those that withdrew, and those that are still in process. The next set of slides under inspection and enforcement go into detail in terms of giving you a sense around the specific sectors, because Honorable Chairperson, when we were here the last time, members said we must give details with regard to the analysis of the inspections and so on. And I won't go through all those, because I assume that members would have gone through, and where there are specific questions around any of the slides, we are ready to answer them. You also have on occupational health and safety, slide number 37. And again, we give breakdowns in terms of the specific provinces and the sectors. And we have done it in detail as per the request of the members. I'm going to skip the rest of the graphs and the slides because they repeat the same information, just that we put them in graphics and go straight to public employment services, which is program 2 on slide 1. On public employment services, slide number 71, we give you a summary per province in terms of the number of work seekers registered. We had a target of 116,000. The actual registered at the end of the third quarter was 206,000, with a variance of 90,000. And you have a breakdown of the targets per province and the actual registered by each province. The next slide, on slide number 72, gives you a sense in terms of the number of opportunities that were registered. We had a target of 40,000, 83,000 was registered, and with a variance of 42,000. The next slide, on 74, gives you a sense in terms of the number of people that went through the counseling. And counseling encompasses a number of things, job preparations, information around opportunities that exist in other areas, assessment using the various batteries that we have by qualified psychologists that we have. And the target that we set ourselves was 104,000. And in total, 145,000 people that registered in our system went through that process. And currently, we're looking at some batteries that will trace these people that were subjected to counseling around their placement and how useful they found the information and how they're using it to actually end their living. The next slide gives you a sense in terms of the number of people that were placed in employment. We set ourselves a target of 5,450, and the actual placement in that quarter was 16,000 with a variance of 11,000. Now, Honorable Chairperson, the next set of slides do what you have asked us to do, which is unpacking the profile of the people registered per province. We also give you that information in terms of the various age groups on slide number 77. And we also give you information around equity on slide number 79. And you will notice that the majority of people that are registered on the system are still predominantly African. And when it comes to opportunities, that is the next one, on education level, you find that that is on disability level. Most of the work seekers that are coming to us to register are those that have a disability in terms of blindness. And again, the details of the slide just gives you breakdown, age group, and so on. But I want to go to another slide, on slide number 85. Now, slide number 85 depicts the number of registered people against the counseling services that we provided. You will notice that in other provinces like Mpumalanga, Limpopo, in Northern Cape and Northwest, we are doing well in terms of counseling and repeat follow-ups to those people. Ordinarily, we would want the blue bar, which is the total number of people registered, with the red bar, which is the number of people who came in for counseling, to be almost at the same level, because when people leave the department, at least they would have had an opportunity to interact with a career counselor who would have given them hope and information and help them in terms of other institutions that can assist them. And the next slide, if I can go to the slide number 89, which is a slide that summarizes the work of PEP. The blue indicates the registration, the red the counseling, the green is the number of opportunities, and you can see the placement is at the bottom. And that is something that the minister and all of us have actually decided that in the 18-19 financial year, we're going to focus in that area so as to improve on the placement rate. We know that even in the opportunities that we have, there are issues around mismatches, especially when employers want people with certain levels of with high skills levels, and you find that some people that we have on the database don't necessarily have those. But in some cases, some of the jobs are lower levels where we have decided that we are going to do everything in our power to follow up on those opportunities and to make sure that we address the large number of people that have been registered with us. If I can then move on to program number 4, which is labor policy. Now, labor policy could not achieve the target on the establishment of institutions of the national minimum wage by March 2018. And I'm sure the reasons are quite known to the committee. But what we have also done is to also look at the indicator to say that in future we must draw a distinction between, in setting a target and putting things that are beyond the control of the branch in the APP, because once the bill is submitted to cabinet and is referred to NEDLAC and subsequently to Parliament, the labour policy and industrial relations do participate, but they go as support and they are not necessarily in control of the processes there, and the non-achievement in terms of those processes reflect on them as if they have not achieved, and yet what they were supposed to do, which is submission of the bill to cabinet, was done. So this is something that we're going to address going forward. The next one on slide number 2 also indicates on the percentage of collective agreements extended within 90 calendar days, and the achievement there was only 83%, and this was due to delays that were caused especially during the December period, LP and IR couldn't do much in terms of those areas. And the whole issue, going forward, the intention is to engage councils in relation to the timing of submitting of this request for publication by the minister, so as to extend them to non-taxes. The next one is slide number 95, where they could not achieve on the number of literature review reports on labor market research. And this was due to our internal processes around procurement. And we have since decided and talked to colleagues around how they should actually manage the procurement processes in line with the procurement plan. Can move on. And the next set of slides just gives you a detail in terms of the analysis on the trade unions and so on. I'll move straight to supported employment enterprises. And there are two indicators on slide number 106. On 106, we providing honorable members with the breakdown in terms of the people with disabilities that are employed in the different sectors that we run. In total, at the end of quarter three, we had 968 employees. If you look at the performance, there were two indicators. They could not achieve the first indicator on 108, and that is slide number 108. And again, the especially in relation to the sales. And the CEO will give more detail on some of the remedial action. If I can move on to the finances. Yes. Okay. Mr. Maduna, do you want to quickly run through the finances, just the summary?
Total allocation of the department of 3 billion. The department has cumulatively spent 2 billion, which amounted to 65.7%. When classified in terms of the divisions of the roles of the department, and the next slide puts this amount in a graphical format. However, the other slide, which probably might be important, is the economic classification, which also deals with the same amount but indicates how much we have spent on the compensation of employees. On quarter three, we have just spent 1.2 billion goods and services, 574 million. Transfers and subsidies, 1.1 billion. Then payments for capital assets, 106 million. Which also gives the total, which gives the, that was the total allocation in terms of the expenditure on compensation of employees, 795 million, goods and services, 343 million, transfers and subsidies, 849 million, then payments for capital assets, 19 million. In total, I think it gives us cumulatively for quarter three two billion spending, which amounts to 65.7. I think the other slides deal with the same information that I probably would just take time and not go through them.
Honorable Chairperson, that is the presentation on Q3 of the Department of Labor, both performance and financial.
Thank you very much, Mr. Muratova, your team. Members, there we have it. Can we engage the presentation? I'm noting in. We have the Honorable Begum there, Honorable Tongwani, Honorable Mashile, The floor is yours, Honorable Begum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I apologize for being late. I was late this morning, and I apologize. I missed the first part of the presentation. I apologize for the department as well. I just wanted to go to slide number 24 first, and especially when we see listed companies. And that's a real problem, and I'm of the feeling that we should name and shame the listed companies. We should actually have a list, and I'd like to see who they are, because we're all dealing with them, we're all investing, and it's actually quite important for us to see what's going on and why this problem is so heavy. If I may go then on to slide number 71. My eyesight isn't as good as it used to be. Slide number 71, we have approximately, when you're looking at this contribute to decent employment creation, you're dealing with approximately 100,000 people. You actually registered 200. But we've got 10 million unemployed. So I'm not sure what we're actually doing here and how much we've actually spent on this. I didn't note the actual breakdown of what we're spending over here. But it'll probably be cheaper giving these people some money instead of trying to create these jobs, because this is just a drop in the ocean, and I'm not sure where we're going with that. If I could then go on to slide number 74. Again, we actually filled 16,500 jobs, which is really nothing. I don't know how many people are employed to actually do this, and this is pitiful, absolutely pitiful. If I can go to slide 77, and you're looking at who actually who registered. And now we know that over 55% of the age group 16 to 25 is unemployed. But we see that's the smallest number that are registered with you. There must be an explanation. They must think that it's either useless or a waste of time or a waste of an exercise. I go then to slide 78, and you've broken it up into various disabilities. And you did point out to us that blindness was the biggest issue. But if you add blindness, partially sighted, visually impaired, it's all part of the same group. That's the community you're dealing with. You haven't actually reached into any other disability sector by the looks of things. And blindness, if you look at the national statistics, is no greater than people in wheelchairs or mental disorders, which is the largest. So I'm not sure where we're going wrong there, and maybe you can explain it to us. If you look at slide number 85, which is good that you're counselling people, and I presume, and you try to explain to us that counselling also means help with CVs and that sort of thing, and how to conduct yourself in interviews, job interviews. But again, it's less than 100,000 people, and again, I'm not sure how much this is actually costing us. I mean, it'd probably be a lot cheaper to outsource it. We look at slide number 89. The placement rate is only 8%, slide 89. I mean, that again is pitiful. Again, you've got the 200,000 work seekers who are registered, which is low as it is compared to the 10 million which are unemployed, but then you're only getting 8% opportunity cost. It's also a bit strange. And then I'm still not a fan of supported employment enterprises, because the public sector are doing this quite well in that they've got placement agencies, We don't charge the individuals. It's a service for free for the individuals. They charge the companies. And I'm not sure, again, how much you're spending on this, but I don't know why you're competing with the private sector to spend an enormous amount of money on supported employment enterprises. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Baker. Honourable Tungwani.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairman's on slide 13. I need clarity because here it is reported that there is irregular expenditure that was detected, and again there's fruitful and wasteful expenditure, yet again it is reported that there's zero unauthorized expenditure that was detected and reported. I just need clarity on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Tungwane. Honorable Mashile.
No, the same Chairperson. I think one of my important question is to check with the department whether the department is heavy about what the department is supposed to be doing as a Department of Labor. And if you are heavy, what informs that satisfaction? When in relation to the employment levels, or coupled with unemployment levels, then given the prescriptions in relation to employment levels of people with disabilities, and in relation to companies that are not complying, injuries that happens at many of these companies, the accidents that happens, and generally the conditions of employment in different sectors. And I think that as late as a few days back, and then you have got these people at the racehorses that are making a lot of noise. They are even threatening the 7th July. Are you happy that you are doing what you're supposed to be doing? And if you are happy, then give us just what informs your satisfaction and your happiness. If not, indicate to us where you think it doesn't give you the joy as a department, and the way there is an intervention required. Chairperson, the other issue that I just wanted to speak to is expenditures. Quarter three is more or less a 75% projection of spending. Now, when you see 100% spending at quarter three, it signifies that there is nothing that's going to happen during quarter four, because you have got no money. There is no money. What is the understanding of the department? What is that section will be doing for the whole of quarter four if everything that they need to do has been done for the whole year, has been done by the third quarter? That is the explanation that I just require to do, because I've seen at some point, I think there is one province where inspections already have got the 100% by quarter three. That means for the whole of quarter four, you don't expect to be doing inspections at all. Otherwise, then you'll be spending money that you don't have. And then the other issue that I just wanted to check is the financial implication of the late conclusion of the national minimum wage bill. How are you dealing with that? Are there any intention of actually making sure that the money that were meant to be spent from May until to a possible date when the national minimum wage is enacted is going to be shifted to somewhere else to effect service delivery, or it should be expected that this money that will have to be rolled over? Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Mashile. Any other hands? Honorable Teko?
Yes, sir. That's very on the overall performance of the government. But when I look at your, I don't know how diligent, when you think half green is 100%, orange is partially, and the other one is red, which is not a shift. But on the page 5, you said 13%, 25%, the marking of your, I don't know, the legend, it says 65%, but 100 is 100. The green is 100%, but still the green on 75% on page 5. That's why I said I want to know how you mark your performance. Because it says 60, overall it's 65%. But you say you have achieved when you said 75%. So I just want to check the... How do you tally the two when it's green at 100% while it's 65%? I don't know whether you understand my question.
Yes.
You understand it? Okay, yeah. So, and the intervention that you're going to put in place where you haven't achieved, because you said not achieved and immediate intervention is needed. What are your interventions that you've put in place to address the whole situation of the department?
Thank you, Honorable Teko. Honorable Mashile, and then Honorable Martin.
Chairperson, I think there's just one that I just needed clarity as well. When does the department record an expenditure in relation to transfers to other entities? Do you record it as money expended just immediately when you hit the button and the money goes across? Or when that entity has delivered services on that particular month, when do you record an expenditure?
Thank you. Honorable Martin.
Chair, colleagues have raised a number of issues based on the quarterly report. And the department has not had the opportunity to respond to a number of the issues raised. But I was going to say that if the presenters can also just bear it in mind, what is it that Parliament can do in order to assist with some of the challenges that they face? I'm just merely reminding everyone that our responsibility as members of Parliament is to formulate laws, regulations in the main, and those are in turn applied by departments and their entities. But after a year, 2 or 3 years of the implementation of those laws and regulations, it might be found that there are a number of unintended consequences that lead to some difficulties. So it's also the responsibility of department entities to point out where there's a need for regulatory or legislative reform. So we should also think broadly. How do we face and mitigate some of these challenges? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Martin. I don't see any other hands. I think from my side, it's just in terms of your overall overall performance, you are indicating that for that quarter, your overall performance is at 65, no. No, it's 71%. But when looking at your financial expenditure versus your performance on slide 8, you are mentioning that you've spent 65.7% and your actual performance is 75%. So when looking at that 10% variance, can I, or am I correct in saying that that can be seen as a possible under expenditure towards the end of the financial year, leading to money being returned to the fiscus? Or in the absence of the report in front of us, did you have remedies or remedial actions in place to try not to underspend when looking at quarter three performance versus expenditure? Then when looking at your fruitless and wasteful expenditure, I assume that there's new cases. But we know it's a trend that's been coming along, and we've continuously engaged in terms of this issue and raised our concerns, especially in terms of consequence management. So do you have anything in place, or what happened in terms of consequence management to deal with those fruitless and wasteful expenditure? Then there's a continuous trend of non-compliance in terms of especially BCA. And when I look at slide 33, I see a high level in terms of the wholesale and retail sector. And knowing very well what is happening in that area, it's a vulnerable sector. What is your actions that you are having in place to try and curb that problem in that area, in that sector? Then when we talk about slide 102. We talk about trade union refused by sector and members in quarter 1, 2 and 3, and when we specifically zoom into the general workers on slide 102, we see there a total number of 12,594, and that's quite a lot of workers affected by that. Did you do further investigations? Because what happened in terms of that number? Because I see in quarter three there's four. Can you explain that to us to understand it better? I think I'll pause there. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. I brought with me the leadership of the department, and I'll ask Ms. Muilwa to deal with the inspection and enforcement related questions. Mr. Vigil Sifield will follow on the labor relations, and Mr. Maduna will deal with the finance-related questions, and I think I also had this one that is related to corporate services, which Ms. Matibesi is going to deal with. I will address the remaining questions, including those relating to public employment services. Nondwangu, there was a question also around people with disability. Okay. Ms. Muilwa.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. Can you try another mic?
Chairperson. And good morning, honorable members and colleagues. From honorable Bakwen, there was a, I think there was a comment around and at the department, what you saying resonates with the stance of the department in terms of JSE versus companies that are not complying. Chair, we can make the list available at a later stage, but I can just mention a few. JSE limited itself. Is also not complying. We subjected it to digitalization. We've got Lionel, Cabaret Holding, Curo Holding, Curo Meridian, EOH, AFOP, Sunton Limited, Shoprite. So we subjected 76 from just giving some of the challenges. And then, Honorable Mashile, there was an area around whether are we happy and satisfied with our performance. I'm going to limit my comments to the inspectorate. Our area of, obviously not happy, and our areas of discomfort mostly circulate around enforcement and compliance levels, because we believe that with each compliance, with each non-compliance, we could be presenting statistics, but behind those statistics are real people that get affected by those non-compliance issues. You can imagine in a construction setup where there's non-compliance or contraventions with OHS, people go to work complete and go back home with limbs gone, in other instances, their lives. So what is it that you're doing? We are emphasizing on prosecution. This is an area, it had been an area of weakness for some time. Because we believe that once we're very strong in that area, it will serve as a deterrent. And our numbers in terms of inspectors are not that many. And therefore, whatever we do has got to send a very strong message that you're not going to be tolerating workplaces that continue to flout the laws of the country. Chairperson, you raised an issue around wholesale and retail and the vulnerability of the workforce that is in there. Wholesale and retail alongside hospitality and agriculture, those are the three sectors that are in our spotlight with regard to basic conditions of employment, enforcement, as well as sectoral determination. So that's where you find that people get exploited a lot. So we've intensified in terms of police inspection. So where we use our statistics and also the trend around complaints that we get to come up with focused strategies that involve police inspections, like I said, where we take the cream of the crop of the inspectorate and go to a particular area and try and sweep it. We also emphasize on advocacy. We believe that through advocacy, we somewhat are able to empower not only employees, but employers as well. And we believe that informed employers tend to be more assertive and they're able to stand up for their own rights. And also are leveraging on existing partnerships, because we believe that the issue of compliance is not the business of the department alone. We also rely on social partners to assist. Organized business has got a role to play. Civil society, all of us have got to rally around issues of non-compliance so that we are able to sweep the areas that are problematic. So I think those are the areas that were raised around the question. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to the Honourable Members. There were two sets of questions that were related to LPNI, but let me just deal with the more broad question around whether we are satisfied with the work that we're doing. My responsibility resides within the labor policy and industrial relations, and we think as a branch and as a department that, that we have contributed significantly to the debates around labor policy. We've contributed significantly to addressing the plight of vulnerable workers in the country, and continuously do so, and continuously revise with the assistance of the portfolio committee as well, and parliament as well as the social partners, in relationship to the manner in which we address some of these issues in relationship to Honourable Martin's request, what can we do? Speed up the process. Unfortunately, we don't have a handle on how we speed up the process as a parliamentary, if we could have had the Labour Relations Act, the Basic Conditions Employment Amendment Act, the National Minimum Wage in place significantly sooner, we would have been much the appreciative in relationship to the work that we do. But I think that we, Honourable Mashele, we contribute significantly. I think progressively in terms of our labour legislation, we have progressive. I think the most progressive labour legislation in the world. I think so. That's in a short answer to your question. Yes, Honourable Mashele, there is a financial impact, but it does not mean that we, in terms of the delay of the National Minimum Wage Labour Relations Act and the Basic Conditions Employment, yes, there would be an impact, but it does not mean that we have stopped the work in the department. We are pushing some of the issues so that we have our ducks in a row to the point where we are hamstrung by the lack of a legislative framework in terms of doing what we're doing. So if you want to establish the National Minimum Wage institutions, we need the law to be able to establish it. We cannot proceed the law, but we are moving up to a point where we just have to wait that for the cusp, the legislation to be promulgated, and then we can move on that. We have, for example, we've done the organizational design work around the National Minimum Wage Commission. We've done we're in the process of engaging, and we still will continue to engage with stakeholders around the National Minimum Wage, the Labour Relations Act, and the BCA. We are putting in place a communication strategy, which we have gone to a large extent already, so that when the National Minimum Wage comes into effect, we will have to. But there will be a financial implication, obviously, as a result of the fact that there has been delay, and we will explore a number of measures in terms of how we deal with the financial implications thereof, whether we are asked for a rollover or whether we could utilize the funds more progressively in other institutions in the department, for example, the CCMA that would need some money, etc. But that will be dealt with in the moment when we understand the true implications of the lateness of the legislation. The second question that was asked in relationship to slide 102, Chair. Can I just point that these are trade unions that are refused the registration because they do not comply with the legislation, and it will affect the number of members in that industry. For example, for general workers in quarter one, as you pointed out, these are the members. It's not the number of trade unions it's just the number of members. And by virtue of the fact that these are voluntary organizations that are established, we cannot decide on the numbers or have an impact on the numbers that they represent. However, our caution that we want to put in place is that for those unions in the general workers category, as an example, We have not registered or refused to register. We've refused to register trade unions which are bogus unions for a number of reasons. The unions that do not comply with labor relations act, unions which constitutions are not compliant with the act, etc. So there's a number of reasons why unions would be refused to registration. The main reasons are obviously the two that I've raised. They do not comply with the Labour Relations Act, and the constitution that they put forward does not comply with the Act in and by itself. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I think I've answered the questions.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. In relation to the question of why we should still retain and create employment opportunities to persons with disabilities in supported employment enterprises. I want to indicate to members that global evidence, both in the developing and the developing and the developed world, suggests that various governments provide employment opportunities to the most vulnerable sections of our society, and in this case, persons with disabilities. What the department does is something that inherited from the past, where these factories existed as far way back as 1942. Provide employment opportunities to persons with disabilities and those that cannot be integrated into the formal labor market. So what we're doing in the factories is an extension of the past policy of a developmental and current state that looks after those who may not be integrated into the formal labor market. Restoring the integrity of persons with disabilities, ensuring that you reduce the burden from the fiscus by providing employment opportunities to those persons. The consequences, if we're not to do that, will be to overburden the overburdened fiscus with regards to getting social grants. The factories ensure that we reduce the burden on the fiscus by providing employment opportunities to persons with disabilities. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Are we done with the
Thank you, Chair. The question that I picked up, I wrote down most of the questions, but I picked up one which was talking about the how are we going to ensure that those targets that we don't achieve, we achieve in the next financial year. What we did was, you'll find that most of the targets that we did not achieve or indicators that were not achieved, some of them were either not smart or they were they had external dependencies. For example, under administration, we had targets that were dependent on the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation as far as the impact and standards are concerned. Now, what we did was we then removed the dependency on the DPME so that we don't have to blame it when we haven't achieved. And I think in certain programs it's not easy to do that. For example, LP and IR. And what we also do is before we conclude the APP, the document, we then take it through our internal audit process for it to be audited, pre-audited, so that when we publish it, it's already done with the internal audit to check the smartness and, you know, to ensure that we don't have external dependencies. That was the only question that I picked up, Honourable. Thank you.
With regards to finance, there were four questions. The two are related. They deal with unauthorized expenditure, irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful. I will combine the answer on those ones. I'm going to look for those two questions. The second one deals with transfers and subsidies. When do we record expenditure when we do transfers to public entities? And the third one deals with 65.7% finances vis-à-vis 75% performance. The first one that deals with unauthorized expenditure, irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful. We are reporting that we did not have unauthorized expenditure. Yes, indeed, we did not. Probably the definition of unauthorized expenditure, it's I think it specifically states that it's when we have exceeded our voted funds. At this point of the financial year, we still have some money, so that's not the look. That's why we couldn't detect anything on that one. The other possibility of unauthorized is when money is used not in accordance with the objective of the vote. We did not detect that one either. So hence we reported that there is zero unauthorized expenditure. With regards to irregular expenditure, we are reporting that we detected 116,639. Fruitless and wasteful is 83,125. These are all new cases just for the quarter that we are reporting, that is Q3. That's the first part. The second part to probably explain the whole issue around unauthorized irregular expenditure, fruitless and wasteful, with regard to what are saying detected and reported. The prescripts and the underlying circulars require that when we detect, we report to the accounting officer immediately as the first step. The second step is the investigation that follows, but already the accounting officer has got a record of what has been detected. The third step then deals with what the investigation comes up with. In terms of protest and wasteful, that will be recovery and consequence management and onto the person who has, onto the person or persons who have caused the fruitless expenditure. With regard to irregular expenditure, it's a recovery, yes, or possibly condonement if the investigation feels that the department did get the value, it's just that the procedures were just not followed. But also, the report will indicate the consequence management that should then be, followed on the official or officials that caused that irregular expenditure. The second question that deals with transfers and subsidies as we wish, as when do we record irregular, okay, when do we record expenditure? We record expenditure as soon as we press the button of payment. The reason for that is that right at the beginning of the financial year, we have to facilitate for the entities to perform. So some of the transaction will happen from day one of the financial year, so that the entities can then start spending the money to achieve their objective. So for us, it's expenditure already. The second part of the monitoring as to whether the money is spent according to the objectives, that will follow. But they will have to have money to do whatever that they need to do. If they don't, I think the monitoring part from by the branches that are linked to that public entity will then monitor to ensure that the objectives on which the money was transferred are being achieved. The third question of the 65.7% money spent vis-a-vis the performance of 75%. Well, during the financial year, there is that mismatch. In some cases, as the other way around, where the percentage of expenditure is more than the performance. Here the issue is the 65.7 for us is the cumulative up to the third quarter, 75% is the performance just for the quarter. But at the end of the four quarters, well, I think that's where from the financial side we can say we have come under or over the budget. But sitting here in the new financial year, we do know the results of the four quarters. There has been money that we surrendered to fiscal. We didn't spend 100% of our money looking at the four quarters, not just for quarter three, which I think in this case it was the other way around. But when we consolidated the four quarters, we found that we have spent more than what we have achieved. That has happened, and there were some money that we surrendered on compensation of employees and goods and services. But that will be consolidation for the whole four quarters.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. There was a question around the list of JSE companies, and I'm sure the
implement, I mean, the inspection enforcement can do that, because this is well known. Honorable Bathrain raised a question around why should we be registering people, but also equally said there's more than 10 million people unemployed. Now, honorable members, we work closely with FSA, and the 10 million are estimates. Government does not know who the 10 million are, where they sit, where they are located, and so on. What we have agreed with the State SA and why we build a database in the Department of Labor, so that you can, and this is not something that we are doing just for the sake of doing. I would like to refer members to the sections of the Act which was passed by this Parliament, and the convention, that the ILO Convention number 88, which basically compels or calls on government to establish credible databases of people so that they can know exactly where they are. And in other countries, in fact, people are given money on condition that they are registered, and if you are not registered, you are declared to be working, and therefore you are subjected to all other things. And in the country, the only department that is doing this work to date is the Department of Labor, that is doing its best. Yes, of course, we don't have a total number of people. At the last count, we were standing at 4.3 million. Those are people that we can say we know exactly where they are, but a database is also not static, because as people get employment and get placement, you remove them and new ones come in, and that is something that has been happening on the ESA database. So also, why are we working, doing this work and not giving it to private employment agencies? Now, there is Convention 181 of 1949 that clearly indicates how every government should work with private employment agencies. Private employment agencies, by their nature, are for gain, and they charge companies, or when companies, if they place a person and that person resigns for some reasons, that money is then paid by an individual, because it's seen as a debt against the company. And we have quite a lot of cases where people are coming to the department complaining about that issue, and we have had numerous meetings with APSO, which is the umbrella organization of private employment agencies, to try and deal with that problem, because private employment agencies are not supposed to charge learners, but they are indirectly finding a way of passing those costs to learners. And that is why, honorable members, you have also passed a provision in the Employment Services Act for prosecution of such bodies. And we have had discussions with the law enforcement agencies around those provisions to see how best we can implement some of them to deal with cases. Yes, the number of cancelled people vis-a-vis, that is the number of registered people, the target that we have is just for the financial year, it's not the cumulative target of what we have in the database. Obviously, there are estimates that on a yearly basis, about 800,000 people are entering the labor market. If you take those coming out of schooling system, dropping out, those that are getting retrenched, and so on. And we're not that far off with state SA figures, because if we're able to capture about 600,000, and estimates are that there's 800,000, we believe that we are in not far off, and would want to capture more people if possible. And obviously, the downside, you are correct, Honourable Member, is that if you register people and they don't see the benefit of being registered, some of them don't see the importance of registering with the department. And the placement rate being low, we did comparisons with other international bodies, and at the most, the international statistics indicate that national public service bodies like ours are somewhere around the region of 13%. Now, at 8%, we are still not happy, and that is why the minister in the budget vote did indicate that we would want to focus more in that area. Because if you look at the opportunities that employers are registering with us, in fact, employers have, in big parastatals companies, have actually saw the benefits because they are saving on the advertisement and the recruitment that they used to pay private employment agencies. We are not competing with them. We are doing a national service that the convention calls on us to do or to render to members of the public. The work around people with disabilities, I would also want to refer members to two conventions. The United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disability and Convention C-159 of the ILO that calls on governments to establish special employment for people with varying levels of disabilities, including support measures. And that is why supported employment factories are just but one. Social development has got more than 565 similar companies that they are subsidizing and funding to provide people with various disabilities. In the department, we have been funding or subsidizing salaries of people employed in companies such as DIFSA, your South African National Council for the Blind, etc. And that expired end of March, and currently we're in the process of opening up, and we should finalize by end of May the appointment, that is the allocation for the next 3 years to new companies that are going to benefit from the scheme. It's not much money that we have, it's only about 12 million, and Treasury has also seen the importance of also assisting for possibility of giving us additional funds in that area. Now, there was also a question, I think colleagues did touch on the question around whether we are happy or not. Obviously, the underperformance is a worrying issue to all of us as managers in the department, and we've taken a number of measures. We've brought in managers at provincial level to talk to them around performance. We have conducted monitoring visits where the whole team here visited individual provinces, and we spent quite some time in the operations and working closely with our people in the operations and looking at the problems that they are having so that we can provide assistance where we can. And I think colleagues did touch on those. I think there was a question that was around the difference that is achieved, I mean, 100% and 75 spending. The 100% relates to the achievements, and it's a point that links to the legend. The legend green simply means that if you achieve 100% plus, it means you have achieved. If you have achieved 99% and you are 1% short, you have not achieved. That's what the AG indicate. I mean, basically deals with our performance. Now, the 100% does not necessarily mean that you have spent 100% of the money. It means that for that quarter,
you manage to achieve or exceed your targets. The CFO did indicate that even though we had achieved our targets in some cases, but the expenditure was still low, which is why at the end of the financial year we had some level of under-expenditure. I thought that I should clarify that point. Thanks, Honourable Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable Members, can I just bring to your attention that we're not looking good in terms of time, but I'll allow Honourable Begum to do a follow-up.
Thank you. I'll be quite quick if I can. Thank you very much for that. Just to start off with the first answer, non-compliance is like a tidal wave. The department is not going to stop that. And so you obviously, and you spoke to us about finding partners to help you with the non-compliance. The bargaining council should be pushed more, and you should be somehow, I know you don't have control over them, but somehow push them. And you have a partner in the unions. That's their duty. That's for the reason for their existence, is that the law is complied with. And I don't see the department ever pushing the trade unions to do this, but that's why they exist, really, to ensure compliance. On that level, then, I just... I'll leave that out because otherwise it gets too long. Just in terms of supported employment enterprises, and we will have a chat later, but there are the private sector, through the various disabilities, have their own employment workshops. And I think it would be a lot more, and this is just my personal feeling, but it would be a lot more successful ensuring that they spread those workshops. Most of them are suffering because they don't have money, they don't have facilities or whatever, but they have an ability, and they're creating more employment than the department ever will. And maybe there should be more of a partnership there. And I heard you, sir, when you said that you do, to a large degree, supplement some of the salaries. And I think that's a lot, I applaud that, because that's a lot more functional, because they already exist. I know I went yesterday to Epilepsy, to their workshop here in Cape Town. They're doing a fantastic job. Their problem is they don't have enough machinery and et cetera, et cetera. So just on that, I'm not knocking what Supported Employment Enterprise does. I think it's doing a fantastic job. I don't think there's a performance issue of SEE. I think it's a money issue, and I think we're targeting the wrong area, and that we're trying to put up our own factories, when in fact they already exist in the private sector, and you could go into partnerships with them.
Thank you, Honourable Begum.
I do have more, but it's fine.
Thank you. Thank you. Honourable Korai, just a quick one.
No, thanks, Jay. I'm sure also you have to cut me, because sometimes, because the department must deal with us, some of us, we are new in this community. And some of the things we have to understand is very clearly, especially from the CFO response. To the CFO, when you talk about the less expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we have to explain the terms. You don't actually explain to me and make me to understand why, what was the cause, and what is the measure for that fruitless expenditure? Do you have people? Do you have something that I can touch, tangible thing that you can explain to me what has happened within the department in terms of 83,125 fruitless and wasteful expenditure? Also on the irregular expenditure. You just explain, and I don't understand your explanation. But the measure, and is these two things existed? We wanted to understand where it was existed within the department, and what are the measures? Lastly, Chair, this one of the department not spending their budget. I don't want to say their food budget, but I'm worried when the department is giving certain amount and they take back their money to treasure. Do the department understand what they are doing? The recapitulation of what they are doing, what they are doing because as I understand that you manage anyway, the issue of the managing of finances and achieve your targets, but you do still you have a problem of spending all your money. And you tell us that there are certain amounts that we have bring back to treasury. And to me, I just wanted to understand really in terms of the amount that you take back to treasury. Thank you.
Sir, I'm on the seat here. Honorable Teku?
No, it's not the question. Overall, the performance is good from quarter one, quarter two to quarter three. I've observed an improvement. So we need to also to acknowledge that to say, without doom, we can mm-hmm. see you're working, you can see there's improvement. But you have to maintain that to make sure that you address all the issues that the AG has raised and to make sure that coming quarter four we have a good story to tell.
Honorable Korai,
yes.
Thank you. Your mic was just on. Now, thank you for those comments. I think from my side, it's just welcoming the fact that even though there's outcry for outsourcing of in-source services, I think we need to put the record straight that we are welcoming the fact that the department keeps on having the in-house services and retaining it, because we know the government of the day is towards insourcing instead of outsourcing. So if we can try by all means to keep those services in-source, it's a plus to us. But also to acknowledge rightfully, as the Honorable Teko said, that we hampered on the fact that there's a low performance level, and we are coming now that indeed we see there is movement in terms of the performance, and just that little point of the money that's being returned to the fiscal deficit. I'm not going to ask at this stage how much money, so in terms of that, I think that there's a little bit of disappointing factor. But we'll speak to that when we deal with the fourth quarter report. So can you quickly respond in terms of those questions? Thank you.
Thanks. I will quickly deal with the food system wasteful expenditure as to why, how it comes about. The Department of Labor does have labor centers, but not in all the towns. As a result, most of our staff are traveling to do some work in some areas. So they normally book into some B&Bs, into some hotels for them to undertake. Mm. Unfortunately, we do have a situation that when some work schedule changes, sometimes it doesn't filter through. So most of this money, almost all of it, is no shows to those areas where we have booked. So from where I am, it's the money that we spent that we shouldn't have. So those are the areas that then falls or that we discover when we then deal with the investigation after we have reported to the accounting officer that there is this fruitless and wasteful expenditure. In terms of irregular expenditure, it's not following proper processes. The Department of Labor is working on a very decentralized environment. As a CFO in the provinces, money is being spent in the processes. In some cases, not proper processes are followed. We also detect that. Yes, we have to train and retrain, and also in terms of consequence management, do take some corrective measures. But even though we have done all that, we still pick up that there is irregular expenditure of 116. But I'm looking at the billion vis-a-vis what we have detected. It's not so much, even with the no-shows as well. It's 450, 1,005 there, here and there. That amounts to 83.
No, Honorable Machine, I'm not going to look at you. I know that you're not satisfied. We are going to proceed to the next.
The issue chair is avoiding to talk about recovering the wasteful. He's just avoiding to speak to that, you see. And that is problematic.
Okay, that is a serious concern, and it has been raised several times before. And you are not coming back literally with our quarter two report. That was one of our concerns that we've raised. And you're not speaking to it, but I'll allow you not to speak to that issue now, because it's clear that you don't have an answer ready. But let me request you to go back and respond to us via a written response and respond fully to it. I think we are satisfied in terms of that, Honorable Mashile. Yes, thank you very much. We're going to move forward. And we give to the Unemployment Insurance Fund, and I'll really request the members to be mindful of the time, seeing that we are going to the plenary at 2. Thank you, Unemployment Insurance Fund. Members, can you please give the attention, please? Yes. You may proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, Honourable Members. I am not going to go through slide by slide, but I'm going to request members to go straight to the quarter three report, which starts on slide number 18. Slide 18. For the financial year, we had 12 plant indicators, and as at the third quarter, the overall achievement for the UIF was 58%. Basically, what we had in terms of improving financial management, we had three indicators. We achieved all of them. Improving service delivery, we had five. We achieved two in the third quarter and could not achieve three, resulting in a 40% achievement in that area. Improved compliance to the Unemployment Insurance Act. We had two indicators. We achieved one and did not achieve one. Funding poverty alleviation schemes. We had two and only managed to achieve one in the third quarter. If I may take the members to slide number, just dealing with areas where we did not perform. Slide number 31. Percentage of valid claims with complete information approved or rejected. We had an annual target of 90% of claims paid within 15 working days. For the third quarter, we achieved 84%. We missed the target by 6%. And if I may talk to the reasons why we could not achieve the 90%, is that we do have system challenges in that our systems are not integrated. However, Chairperson, there are measures in place where we are working on integrating the systems. And previously also we had indicated challenges of bandwidth. We are working on that. Currently, there is a project to install Wi-Fi in our labor centers to deal with the challenges. The other target that we could not meet is the payment of in-service benefits within 5 working days. We achieved 75% instead of 90%. We missed the target by 15%. And this is also related to the system challenges that I have mentioned. Percentage valid claims payment for deceased benefits, we had a target of 90%. We achieved 84%. We missed the target by 6%. Once again, this is related to system challenges that I have mentioned. If I refer the members to slide number 36, percentage increase in revenue per year. We, for the third quarter, we wanted to increase our revenue by 5.4%. We only managed to achieve 3.75%, and this is due to the economic conditions within the country, which is something that is beyond our control. Slide 38, turnaround time to transfer funds to partners after receipt of accurate invoices. We gave ourselves a target to pay the invoices within 10 working days. We could not achieve this. We received 15 invoices. 4 were paid within 10 working days, and 11 were paid only after 10 working days. And what we are looking at in terms of corrective measures here is to align our target to the prescripts that we are having. Honorable members, I don't think I should go into it. Look at slide 39. It gives a breakdown of the details of the challenges that we actually faced within the third quarter with regard to non-achievement of the targets. And in the main, it's around our systems that are not integrated with regard to the payment of benefits. If I move members to slide number 41 and 42, that's our financial expenditure. For program one, we had a budget of 1 billion and we spent 543 million, which is a 51% expenditure. Program 2, which is improving service delivery, we had a budget of 11.7 billion. We spent 65% of the budget, which equates to 7 billion. Improving compliance to UIF legislation, we had a budget of 245 million. We spent 206 million, which is 84%. In terms of Program 3, Funding Poverty Alleviation Schemes, we had a budget of 652 million. We only spent 24 million, which is a 4% expenditure. Just to indicate the challenges that we had around Funding Poverty Alleviation Schemes, it's with regard to transferring funds for our TLS program. There were challenges with regard to verifying and the invoices that were submitted. The fund had to do due diligence before we could transfer the funds, and that caused the delay with regard to the transferring of the funds. However, currently, just to mention to the committee, that the DG has issued an instruction that we should transfer funds. However, what the CFO is currently doing is to perform a due diligence on the invoices that have been submitted in line with the prescripts, PFMA, and other service level agreements that we are having with our partners before we could transfer them. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Members, we have questions. I think it's very clear. Do we have, I'm noting hands, members. Are we clear? Okay, there's Honorable Kuraid and Honorable Mashiru.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for presentation. I'm now happy with the presentation, but my concern is very seriously about the, if the department or the entity has put a target and the department doesn't meet that target. To me, it's a point of concern, and because the department talks about the target and the system, if I understand, if you put the target, you must also watch your systems so that they must work hand in hand. The reason to say because of the systems does not match what to me is not valid reason. I think the department were aware that you were aware when you put the target, you wanted to achieve something. You must put everything in line so that you must achieve what you wanted to achieve. But and overall, I'm happy that the last one is one of the the last one of the opportunities is really the CFO is right. You must do the due diligence. Very important before you can give any transfer. And but that must not delay the work of the HD. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Chairperson, mine is just that the institution is bordering around 50% performance. It's bordering around the 50% performance. And now in this quarter three, from your quarter two, you are stagnant. You are stagnant. You are not improving. And surely it should worry you. It should raise questions whether you guys are doing what you are supposed to be doing there, or you're just hanging on there. But the main question that one also has to ask Chairperson is, because I did not want to argue with the CFO of the department, it is still the issue that irrespective of where the UIF gets its money, but that's the principle. The principle is when you transfer 100 million to an institution, you then record expenditure. And the institution for the same period records that it has spent 50% of that money. You pick up the disparity. That's my work. Thank you,
Honorable Mashile. Just from my side also, I have a concern in terms of the 40% expenditure on the improvement of service delivery as well, even though you try to clarify that. But just to take note on that one. But also in terms of the 4% expenditure to poverty schemes, although we take into consideration that due diligence needs to be adhered to, but there needs to be a measure in place to try and fast-track that process also to ensure that indeed that money has been spent quickly or in a better way. If we can at least have 50%, it's going to feel better, because we are looking at advantages to the poorest of the poor, and those are the kind of bottlenecks that hampering service delivery. Thank you very much. You may proceed.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I think in the main, mostly were comments. I'm going to comment on the question as to whether we are doing what we are supposed to do. If I may refer the members to slide 24. Previously, when you look at our targets, we used to pay our benefits within 5 weeks or 35 working days. We have stretched our targets. Currently, we are paying our benefits within a reduced number of days, which is 15 days. Although the performance might look as if we are not performing, but we are paying our benefits quicker than how we used to pay them previously, and that is something that the members have to know. If you look at unemployment benefits, we have paid benefits within 15 days, which equates to 57%. In service benefits, that is your maternity, illness and adoption, we have paid benefits within 5 working days, which equates to 85%. Deceased benefits, we paid within 10 days, equating to 71%. So in the overall, it may look like we are not performing, but we are actually paying the benefits quicker. However, the comment is noted, we should be presenting a better performance in the fourth quarter.
thank you very much. I think we are covered. But just in terms of one of the issues that we raised in terms of quarter two performance, the matter of the long queues, can you give us an update on that matter?
The fund has undertaken a new queue management system, which has been piloted in a number of provinces. Currently, I do not have any statistics, but what I know is that we have looked at the queue management system, and it has been piloted one in Limpopo, in Gauteng, and in Northwest. And where there were glitches, we are working on those glitches to ensure that we roll out the process in all the provinces.
Thank you very much. 2 minutes, Honourable Begum.
Thanks. It's not a question, it's just an accolade, and that I get in complaints because I run radio programs, and it's dropped quite radically. So they're doing something right. I must tell you, the complaints from Gauteng have dropped to about a fifth of what they were. Thanks.
Thank you. We commend the department or the entity on that one. So with that, we are done with you. Thank you very much for your presentation. We move to the compensation fund. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning to honorable members. I'm going to present the performance of the compensation fund for quarter three. I will start my presentation on page 2 of your handouts, the second slide, which shows the performance of the compensation fund in each of the strategic objectives. The compensation fund has two strategic objectives. It is annual performance plan and strategic plan. The first one is to provide an effective and efficient land-oriented services, as well as the second one is to provide faster, reliable, and accessible land services by 2020. The annual performance plan of the compensation fund has about 9 indicators, 7 of which were reportable by end of quarter 3. For the first strategic objective, there were 2 planned indicators where we achieved 1 and we didn't achieve 1. I'll touch on the specifics later on. And on the second strategic objectives of providing fast and reliable accessible quality services, we had 5 planned indicators that were reportable by end of quarter 3. 3 of them had been achieved and 2 were not achieved, which brings the total performance of the compensation fund for quarter 3 to 57%. On the next page, page 3 of your handout, the first slide just shows the same performance that I showed according to the 3 program structures that we had during the 2017-2018 financial year. It just breaks it down. It just shows that for program 1, 50% of the targets were met, for program 2, 33%, and for program 3, 100% of the targets were met. The second slide on page 3 just shows now for each of the performance indicators. Members will note that the performance indicators that were not achieved, the third performance indicator relating to percentage of active registered employers that are assessed annually by 31st of March 2018, we achieved 45%. The target was to have 75% of all employers assessed for payments to the compensation fund. The second indicator that was not achieved is the percentage of requests received for prosthetics and assistive devices that have to be adjudicated within 15 days of us receiving the request for approval. We had the target of 85%. We were able to do 66% in quarter 3, by end of quarter 3. And the last one that was not achieved was the one where we have to respond to requests for pre-authorizations where our clients have to undergo medical procedures. The target is to have these approved within 10 working days. And the target was 85%. We were able to do 75% of these within 10 working days. And the balance of these requests and the approvals happen after the 10 days. But we do attend to all the requests that are submitted. If you go to the next page, page 6 of the handout, the bottom slide just shows the reasons for each of those 3 indicators that we did not achieve. The first one was on the active employers that have to be assessed annually. The main reason for this issue is the fact that employers do not comply with legislation. As a result, there has to be follow-up processes. Our ROE submission season, or the season in which employers are required to submit their return of earnings, is from the 1st of April to the 31st of March of May. And after the ROE season, we then assess who are those employers that have not submitted their ROEs, and then there are follow-up processes that we have to do with employers to make sure that they comply. So we could, by end of December, we could do about 45% of employers. And so that's the main reason. And one of the things that we're doing now is through the department, we have created specialized inspectors that are working within the Inspection and Enforcement Services branch of the department that are going to now solely focus on payroll audits for COID legislation. We didn't have those in the past. So these are inspectors that we're going to focus exclusively on compliance to the COID legislation. The second indicator that we did not achieve, as indicated, was the one for approval of prosthetics and assistive devices that have to be adjudicated within 15 working days. This is a new target. It's in line with the new functions that we've introduced in the fund and the new skills that we are now attracting in the fund to be able to deal effectively with issues within medical services of the fund. And as we indicated in the past, this is a new function that has been decentralized to provinces recently. So the combination of limited skills and experience in terms of dealing with this has led to a slowdown in the speed within which we adjudicate these requests. But as I indicated, we do attend to all the requests that are received. It's the same with the target for pre-authorizations that have to be approved within 10 working days. Linked to the same thing, that we've decentralized this recently to provinces, and continuous training that needs to happen, as well as teaching people how to go through the different systems that we use in order to be able to look at the data that enables our medical service practitioners to make a decision on whether the request for a pre-authorization can be approved or not. In the next page, slide number 11, the top slide on page 6 of the handouts, just shows how we've performed in terms of the budget. In program 1, which is administration, we've spent about 58% of the budget at the end of December. Program 2, about 27% of the budget. Now, in program 2, what we do budget for as well is the provisions that we make, the actuarial provisions that we make at the end of the financial year for outstanding claim reserves, as well as the provisions for future pensions and so on. So we do budget for these, and we only incur that expenditure at the end of March, where we have to pass the entry through our books. Program 3 also is we have spent about 54% of our budget by the end of December, which makes the overall spending against the budget by end of December at about 32%. Chairperson, the rest of the slides is the same information broken down by province, giving additional details information around the statistics of the claims that we've paid for the period of April to December.
Thank you very much, Mr. McFarlane. Members, we're noting hands. Honourable Begum and Honourable Mashile after. Your mic, Honourable
Mr. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mufata. I appreciate it, and I want to say up front that every time I send in a complaint, I get quick answers from you and your team, and I thank you for that publicly. But I do want to point to the incredible backlog and the history, not under your regime, but under the history of the last 25 years. I'm still getting ongoing complaints from people who have been injured 20 years ago, 15 years ago. You know most of them as Mr. Howe, Errol Howe from Port Elizabeth. I can go through all the names. I have sent them on to you. And there somehow seems to be just no movement with them. I know a handful of them have found their way into the courts, but it should be quite easily settled instead of spending enormous monies on defending them. There was one where
I even put out a warrant for your arrest in the Labour Court, if you recall. I think you've now appealed that, or there's something going on there. But in one of the occasions that we spoke over here in this committee, you said that you were going to settle that case, and somehow it hasn't been. I know it's not your issue, but you've obviously inherited this hunchback. And maybe you want to comment on it. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Begum, Honourable Mishnele.
Chairperson, when I'm looking at slide number 5, I think it's slide number 5 on page 3, I also pick up that we are also bordering on 50% performance. But it is a little bit, you know, crucial. I know that they are not politicians, although they are politicians in kind. When this institution is dealing with this kind of work, and then it performs at 50%, what is the political implication of this on the ground? Do you really appreciate what is the political implication? And you then go to page 6, Gauteng. Let me just pick up Gauteng. Then Gauteng talks to almost like 58,000 claims. Then you perform around 96% on those claims, those that you've adjudicated within 60 days. Then you miss 4%. Do you appreciate what is the amount of claims that constitute that 4%? Talking about more than 2,000 claims. And those people, they are waiting, vulnerable, disgruntled, and waiting for something to actually activate their lives. More than 2,000 kids are sitting somewhere else, longer. Maybe some of them may not even be concluded for many, many days after the 60 days. But you appreciate the implication. Your plans need help. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Mashile. From my side, it's just, even though we've condemned the 43% performance in quarter 2, you really promised that you're going to improve your performance, and you've delivered on your promise, and we want to welcome that from 43% to 57% in quarter 3. But my concern now is in terms of the expenditure. You've delivered on 57% overall performance, but your expenditure is 32%. Can you try and assist us on how best are you going to adhere to the to the expenditure going towards the end of the book year? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. I'll go through the questions in the order that they were asked. The issues of the backlogs. I think we've dealt with a large number of the backlogs that the compensation fund has had. If you look at most of the claims, even we can see it also even with some of the complaints that get referred through the various channels to us. But in most cases where a claim has not been assessed, it's because there is outstanding information to enable the compensation funds to make a decision on whether it will accept liability for the claim or not. And what we continuously do is then work with the claimants to make sure that we interact with the employer, the medical service providers, if they need to provide medical reports, so that we can be able to make the decisions on this. In fact, what we are a strategy that we've now adopted is that we are going to, because we've done it in the 2015-16 financial year, where we then published requests for people to come forward with information if they have any outstanding claims or not. In the first instance, we really didn't have much response. but we are looking at ways now that we can do it a bit differently. So we will be starting the program that we would publicize to get people to come forward with any outstanding information that or any outstanding claims that they have with the fund. But we've often found that most of the time is the claim could not have been finalized even back then because there was outstanding information. And this this is linked to the question that was asked about how much the 6% versus the 4%. You know, the claims process of the compensation fund is a bit more complex because in a single claim you have multiple players that need to provide certain information before you can make a decision on whether you can accept liability or not, and that's what adjudication is all about. For any a worker that gets injured, that worker needs to be sent to a hospital or to a doctor. You need to get medical reports from that particular doctor. Now the law says that within that 90 days that the person is going through treatment, the employer should pay the person's salary, and we then reimburse the employer for the salary that has been paid. If you look at our target says that we need to make sure that we adjudicate the claim within the first 2 months of the incident. And the majority of the claims, it doesn't mean that those that outside then the 85% target don't get dealt with. And those that get dealt with after, and most of the time we try and make sure that we get all this information from the various role players. You'll find that those that fall behind are those that either you have not received the final medical report from the doctor, or you have not received all the information with regards to the incident to enable you to be able to make a decision on accepting liability or not. So this is some of the challenges that we see when we have to adjudicate a lot of these claims that we have, and those are some of the things that contribute to us not being able to adjudicate all claims when we receive them within a number within a short space of time. The issues around the performance of the budget, I think that's the point that I've said, and what we're doing now for the 2019-20 budgeting process, we're actually going to change the way we do our budget, because we found that we often budget for, when it comes to benefits, the point that I raised that there are certain actuarial valuations that we are required to do in terms of the accounting standards that we must account for in our annual financials. The outstanding claims reserves being one of them. The fact that we also have a pension fund, we also need to capitalize certain values of pensions for future pension payouts. Now, what we've often done is we've included those in our budget in our income statement budget for the year, when the expenditure only gets incurred at the, or when the, in fact, because it's an accounting entry, it's not even an expenditure per se. When the accounting entry only happens in March, when we close off the books. So we will be changing this so that we avoid placing this distortion of performance against the budget. So in future we won't see the budget, for example, for pensions, because that will go straight through the balance sheet from the reserves that we've provided for pensions. And then the outstanding claims reserves for our claims, we will also only include it in the March budget, but we won't carry it in our budget throughout the year. So those are the changes that we'll make to our budget so that we create a better picture of what is in our budget. But if you look at the other programs, Program 1 and Program 3, the expenditure is quite in line with the level of performance of the fund, which is in the 50%.
Thank you, Mr. Masata, the Honorable Biden, then Honorable America.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Masata. I think it might also be useful, it's not so much calling on the public to come forward with ancient claims, but might be useful working with the doctors. I know I'm working with a group of 160 doctors here in the Cape, and it might be useful to send someone to talk to them when they have one of their AGMs, because they represent right across the board. It might be useful. And then this other problem with the 3 months payments. I'm coming across more, not so much you not sorting out the claims, are coming across more companies refusing to pay their salaries during that 3 months. And that's the complaint I'm receiving, and I think that also falls under your ambit as well, where people are, and I'm not sure how they can do it, they are coming forward and complaining that they're not receiving their salary, and maybe you can tell us what they should be doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Officer, the question I'd like to seek clarity on is the expenditure related to Program 3. You have achieved all the objectives, but the expenditure incurred to achieve those objectives are almost half of what you budgeted for. Is it as a result of savings? Is it over budget? What is the chancery in terms of expenditure? Thank you.
Honorable Machinery.
If he has got knowledge, you know, for the period that he has processed these claims, these claims after 60 days, what is more or less the longest period that the longest claim has taken you to process?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can you respond, Supervisor? I think you're going to give. Start with the last question.
Well, Chair, it can take years, Chair. As I said, sometimes, for example, you can't because adjudication, as I said, it's just adjudication is about making a decision whether you're going to accept liability for the claim or not. So for this, you're dependent on the report you're going to get from the doctor, because the doctor is the one that will tell you this is what has happened to the person, and this is what we assess the disability to be. And also, you also need an accident report from the employer as well. So you find that you either get one or two of the of the reports that you need, or sometimes you don't get any of those reports. So sometimes, in some of these cases, it can take us almost a year trying to get information back and forth from either of the parties. In some of the cases, the inefficiencies of the funds in the past has also created this situation where we would not deal with claims, and it would take us longer than a year to just finalize the
claims. Chairperson.
Thank you. Honorable Machine.
Yeah, I'm sure maybe I've not been understood. I've asked for the claims that we are dealing with here, and your experience, what is the longest period that the longest claim has taken you? I'm not asking reasons what would delay a claim, but an experience that you have, that a particular claim that took long. Did it take 20 years, 5 years, 6 years, during your reign? That's what I'm just asking. Not the reasons that makes a claim to be delayed.
Chairperson, it will take no longer than 6 months. It will take no longer than 6 months to get a claim finalized.
Okay.
But I think it's noteworthy to for the benefit of the new members, just to give them some kind of quick background in terms of claims that we know that's more than 30 years old that's still lying on your books that haven't been resolved, that we are you've been trying to deal with it, but it's still outstanding.
Thank you, Chair. And then the question around the issues of the savings on program 3. Program 3 is the provincial budget where we make allocation for the provinces. We still have a large of the functions of the provinces that are being carried out by head office as well. Head office is supposed to do policy providing strategic direction and so on. But because the decentralization process hasn't really reached the level of maturity where we can solely rely on provinces to carry out the operational work, so we find that in some of the cases we have claims that have been adjudicated, the head office process and so on. So, and provinces are still trying to find their feet. So you find that they don't incur the expenditures as allocated to them during the financial year. And the issue of the doctors, That's what we're trying to do now, talking to doctors. For example, I had a session with the doctors in the Northwest, and one of the things they were indicating to try and help with the claims process, they were indicating they found the same problem with us, and this thing often leads to them not being paid on time, where a person gets sent to a doctor, but the employer doesn't submit a claim to the fund. So once the doctor has treated the client, they submit an invoice to the fund, and they can't be paid because we haven't made any decision on the claim, because we don't have the claim. So one of the innovative ways that they use what they're doing now, some of the doctors, is that they're saying, for example, when they tell the employers, when you send the person to my practice or you send the person to the hospital, send him together with the claim notification, we'll submit it together with the invoices to the compensation fund, so that the fund can adjudicate the claim, and they find it working, because some of those doctors that are doing that, they find that it doesn't take long for them for their claims to be processed, even for the claim of the claimant to be dealt with. So we are reaching out to the different stakeholders that we have in the fund.
I think we are covered then. Thank you. We move forward. Thank you, Mr. Mafato. We move forward to the CCMA. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members and colleagues. I will take the presentation as read and ask members to go to slide 4, which shows the quarter 3 performance of the CCMA. Members will note that for the reporting period, we had 9 targets, 7 of which were achieved and 2 were not achieved, resulting in a 78% performance. This is an increase from the 56% performance of the second quarter. If members can go to the next slide 5. This slide compares the third quarter performance of 17-18 against that of 16-17. Members will note that the statistics there show that there's a slight decrease where in last year's or the previous year's 16-17 was an 86% performance in the third quarter, and the third quarter of the 17-18 showed a 78% performance. But members will also note that with respect to the actual number of targets, 16-17 had 21 targets and 17-18 had 9 targets, so that influenced the overall percentage performance. Even though 16-17 there were 3 targets missed, and in the 17-18 there were only 2 targets missed, but because of the number of targets, it does affect the overall percentage performance. And also for members to note that in 16-17, on our annual performance plan, we did not have our legislative targets of conciliations and arbitrations, which has affected the performance of the organization in the 17-18 financial year. If members can please go to the next slide, slide 6. The CCMA has 4 strategic objectives which are linked to the 4 programs that the CFO will take the members through. And slide 6 basically shows the performance of each strategic objective. And members will note that the 2 targets that were missed for the third quarter were missed in strategic objective 4 of optimizing the organization. And I will talk to the reasons for non-performance in the next slide. On slide 7, if I can request members to please turn to that. The first target that we missed, as I've indicated, is our legislated target. And we performed at a 99.9, so the underperformance is a 0.1% of cases that were heard outside the 30-day period. And as members know, that the Auditor General sees black and white, so it's either 100% or not. We could have just rounded it off, but because we know that the AG will make an issue of the 0.1, we have then recorded it as an underperformance. And the underperformance is mostly because of the 30 days, but the cases were heard, even though they were heard outside the 30-day period. The second target that was missed relates to the arbitration awards, which according to legislation are supposed to be sent to parties within 14 days after the completion of the process. And members will also note that, the performance is 99.80, and the reason we didn't run it off is for audit purposes. So those are the two underperforming targets for the third quarter. The next slide, on slide 8, I won't go through those indicators, but these are the 10 performance indicators at a high level that we report on. On the first one, on the left-hand side, is the number of cases or matters referred to the CCMA during the third quarter. Members will know that there was a slight decrease in the matters referred, with 45,117 as compared to the 47,311 of the second quarter, and we're attributing that possibly to the December break, because about a 1% reduction. The next indicator, as per legislation, we are supposed to conciliate within 30 days, and on average, we took 23 days to conciliate, and that has been consistent from the first to the second quarter as well as the third quarter. With respect to the arbitration cases, the set target is 60 days, performed on average 58 days. And members will know that we've always struggled a bit with this one, when on average for the first and second quarter, it's always been 63 days. In the third quarter, we did at least meet the target of 58 days. Sorry. On the right-hand side, members, the first indicator on the top there is the number of outreach services that the CCMA have conducted under the reporting period. This is under our dispute management and prevention function, and this 562 speaks to all activities conducted across all CCMA offices around the country. And from that 562, the next indicator speaks to the number of persons that were in attendance, and that is 11,489. The next indicator, which speaks to the job-saving initiatives of the CCMA, this relates to the large-scale retrenchment of Section 189A, and this is only the figures that of matters referred to the CCMA, and the annual target there was 35% of jobs saved, and at the third quarter, we're sitting at 34%. The largest number of jobs say lost were in the mining, metal, and business professional sectors. And the last indicator that I would like to flag for members is the number of complaints. This is the complaints we receive from all of our users from various platforms, including our anonymous whistleblowing hotline. And all complaints are investigated and responded to, and where warranted necessary action is taken. The next slide speaks to the five priorities that drive the CCMA's APP. I'll just skip that slide. On slide 10, I want to take members through, but what we've tried to do there is to link all the activities of the CCMA as per the annual performance plan to the triple crisis, as well as to the government outcome. And you'll note that we contribute mainly to outcome 4 through our core mandate, as well as our partnership with the Sheriff's Board, as well as the dispute management and prevention function. That is the second bullet there on slide 10. And the rest of the presentation, Chairperson and members speak to how the CCMA contributes in that regard. If the Chairperson will allow me, I'll hand over to the CFO to take members through the financial performance. Thank you.
Thank you, Anna. Good morning, members. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson. You might please. Good morning. Oh, yes. Okay. Thank you, Anna. Good morning, members, and good morning, Honorable Chairperson. I will take you through the financial results for the quarter. Moving from slide 14, what we did, we present the financial results in a variance reporting format, and we also provide for commentary on the variances on the last column. So I will take that as read, just talk to the high-level outcomes of the financial results. In terms of our year-to-date overall expenditure for the year, we have spent 71% of our budget at the end of quarter three. Normally, we expected to spend about 75% of the budget at that time of the financial year. The 4% variance is mainly because of the adjustment that we made on our budget during midterm, where we added the approved rollover surplus from the previous year, especially for our procurement of the capital assets, because in the first review of the budget, we could not cater for that pending the approval of the rollover funds. So you would note also on the capital expenditure that at the end of the quarter three, we were still sitting with the 75% whereas of the amount that was unspent. That is mainly due to the fact that we only got approval of funding to spend on CAPEX at midterm. So the procurement processes were still underway as at the end of quarter three. And also given that December is a very slow month in terms of operations, being a part of people taking leave breaks. On slide number 14, we basically reflecting the total income for the quarter in terms of what was budgeted and what was actually recognized in our financials. On the income, you would note that we have a variance of 33% that relates to the outstanding grant that was still to be transferred from DOL. In terms of our drawdown agreement, they released the funding on a quarterly basis, which was subsequently released in January. And then in total, in terms of our operational expenditure, we had budgeted 664 for the quarter and managed to spend 637 with the 4% variance, which is in line with the budget in terms of the National Treasury standards. And moving to slide number 15, we're also presenting the financial results in terms of the economic classification. On our compensation of employees, we had overspent by 2%, but that's not over expenditure in real terms, because it mainly relates to the provision that we are expected to make in terms of GRAP reporting standard for leave payouts in case we were to be liquidated or we were to close down. We need to quantify how much of leave is due to the employees. So in real terms, it's not necessarily an overspend. Transfers that we made to our bargaining councils, we only had a variance of 5% in terms of what we budgeted and what we actually transferred. That's mainly because we project what could be claimed by the bargaining councils as at the period in comparison to the prior period. And then in terms of our goods and services, which is for our admin and operating expenses, we're reporting a favorable variance of 10%, and the total operational expenditure, we are reporting a 4% favorable variance, which is in line with the budget that was allocated for the quarter. And then in slide 16, we are also presenting a breakdown of the budget and expenditure in terms of case disbursement being our core and our cost drivers for the organization. In terms of our commissioner fees, we are reporting a favorable variance of 5%. And this is basically the work that relates to two targets that we reported as not achieved as well. So you can see that it correlates with the amount being presented in terms of the underspend of 5% overall. And then in terms of the travel and subsistence relating to case disbursement by commissioners, we are reporting a variance of 20%, and other case disbursement admin costs mainly relating to booking of venues for hearing of cases in areas where we do not necessarily have dedicated offices, we're reporting a variance of 22%. And then in terms of our part-time, our interpreters, We are reporting a variance of 2%. The next slide basically also reflects the same budget, but in terms of our strategic objectives as to how we performed. Overall, again, the 5% favorable variance reflecting the spending in line with the budget projections. And with two strategic objectives reporting material savings, strategic objectives number 2 and 3, mainly because of some administrative and operational activities that were deferred to quarter 4. And the last slide presents the financial results in terms of our programs, the administration, institutional development, corporate governance, and social services. Overall, still reporting the favorable variance of 5% with material savings on corporate governance, 30% variance, and institutional development with 13% variance. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the one, members. The Honorable Bagram, you may proceed. Honorable Mashira, you are noted.
Thank you. If I can just have a look at slide 6, as read with slide 17, one of your strategic objectives is a good relationship at work. And you know that the latest report that we've received is that South Africa came 134 out of 134 countries. And maybe you want to comment on that. That's been embarrassing for all of us in the labor sector, and the whole world is talking about it. I want to have a look also at slide 8 on page 4, because this is incredibly good news, and we keep hearing the good news. It's fantastic that you managed to do that. But compare that you've heard now in this quarter, almost 46,000 cases, and you had less than 100 complaints. That's amazing by any standards anywhere in the world. Absolutely amazing. So well done on that, and maybe you can express that to your senior management, because I think one of the complaints came from me, that I didn't know I was in such a minority. So well done there. I've experienced that it has come down. Your conciliation days are 23 and arbitration 58. You're actually undermining yourself, because people need to know that when they get divided into conciliation and arbitration, it only gets set down for arbitration after the conciliation is heard. In fact, it's not 58. You're doing far better than that. And you're keeping the arbitration cases numbers down to, I think, below 30, if you look at it on that level. And I think you're underestimating yourself there. And the public interest matters, where you've settled 91 out of 107, well, I can't think of any better accolade for a department anywhere else. You can hold your head high, so well done on that. And then in terms of the settlement rates, you've always been targeting 75%. Again, that's absolutely fantastic, and I think everyone should applaud you for that. I'm not so sure, if you go to slide 10, your partnership with the Sheriff's Board, that's not working too well in practice. The people on the ground will tell you that when they do try and get their awards delivered by the sheriffs, they're not that keen. So you need to revisit that, because the sheriffs like to get paid, and they complain about that. So it just might be worth reinvestigating that, because it's the poorest of the poor who get some sort of award, and then the sheriff doesn't want to see them, or they pretend that they're not around. I've been experiencing that. If you go to slide 16, and I'm hurrying up, Madam Chair, you go to 16, commissioner's fees and a little bit lower down, interpreter's fees. I'm still shocked to see that, because I know the interpreters had a fight and said they were employees. I'm not sure what the fees is, and I know that's still ongoing, but shouldn't the commissioners and the interpreters be actually employees, because That's the way this world is looking at it, and in particular, South Africa. Because if you speak to your other partners in the department, they're saying that they want to do away with independent contractors, and yet the CCMA is developing independent contractors. Not that I'm disagreeing with it, I think it should be done, but I don't understand it in the scheme of things at all. And then, of course, the venues. You've saved 22% of the cost of the venues, but the public are crying out for disputes to be held where they are. And I know the CCMA, in years gone by, has been trying to hold arbitrations in the centre. I recently was in Dudurens for an arbitration there, and maybe you should be taking more of those arbitrations out to the centres and spending this money. It's probably worthwhile. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Pegram. I think we must also comment a number of your inputs that you've made, and we fully concur with that, apart from the fact that you are promoting outsourcing. Honourable Mashile?
Yeah, Chairperson, I think I've heard what Honourable Bertram has said. The only thing is that we may be looking at these things from different lenses.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and there is a good reason why the CCMA has been established, why the UIF, the compensation funds, have been established. You know, it's for certain vulnerable people to have recourse when there is some maltreatment and all that. Now, like as I've said before, of course is that from the officials, some of them may be really technocrats and ticking boxes, complying with legislation and the rest. But then the hidden motivation of the existence of this particular institution is the one that is important to us as politicians. Do people get recourse to some of these things that happen to them that they are not supposed to happen? That becomes my worry as a politician. I'm not a technocrat, I'm not an official, I'm not taking boxes. All what I'm looking at is that when you have got cases that you have to actually deal with, then there is 5% of cases that have not been concluded. What does that mean to those particular people that need that recourse? It may be within your rules as you are ticking boxes that no, we have performed, and then it's only 5% out of all of them. But to the very same 5, what is the implication, what is the effect to those people? That is what one wants yourselves to actually also worry about, and don't be too much of technocrats that tick boxes and just worry about compliance, but also the effect and the implication of some of the non-compliance, some of the non-performance issues that happens. And then the other issue, of course, is you're saying that you are transferring funds to the bargaining council. Do you just end up by transferring the funds? How do you make sure that the money has been spent for what you have transferred for? And how does that spending relate to your spending? Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Mashile. I think from my side, it's just I can recall during the quarter two presentation, one of the concerns that was raised in terms of the CCMA is the fact that they are using a year-on-year comparator, while the other entities, including the department, are using the quarter-to-quarter one. And you promised to speak to that issue. I don't know what is, because I see the same thing happening again during the quarter three response. So if we can get the department to go back and try and resolve that issue so that we can have a uniformity across the department as well as the entities. Thank you. You may respond.
thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Most of the comments, but I would speak to the bargaining council's input. We do have a dedicated bargaining council and public agencies unit and dedicated staff members that actually do look at the performance of these bargaining councils. We do receive quarterly performance reports that also get tabled to the governing body, so there is monitoring of the functionality of these bargaining councils after money has been transferred. With respect to the sheriff's board, the CFO will respond to that. I'll speak to the complaint management. The board also did raise an issue that it seems a bit strange that it only received 99 complaints because it's even less than 1% of the total caseload. But these are the figures that we have gotten. As much as we, because we're a service-oriented organization, we do try and promote that users submit complaints, if any. We have a complaint management system that links cases to the complaint management system, so that if there's a particular complaint about a particular case, we do then follow up in that regard. But these are the figures that we registered. Whether the issue is, are there more complaints that don't come to the CCMA? Probably so, but we only can report what comes to us. With respect to accessibility, that is noted, Honourable Member. For the 18-19 financial year, we plan to open 4 new satellite offices in Tata, Sanin, and Belcom, given the budget that we've got. So that is the plan for expansion for 18-19. We're also looking at the mobile office. We did a feasibility study. The costs that the feasibility study reveals is something that we cannot afford at this stage, but we are looking to see how we can leverage on existing partnerships to see how we can acquire those mobile buses for usage without purchasing. We're looking at leasing from other state public entities like the IEC when they're off season. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, we do acknowledge that we have serious challenges when it comes to the sharing spot, and we are indeed relooking at the function. The challenges do go as far as how we even disperse payments to them, and indeed we are looking into that challenge. And then in terms of the commissioner fees, what is being reported on slide 16 is a combination of our full-time and part-time commissioners, the figures that we see then. And yes, we do have operational targets in terms of caseload allocation. Most of our commissioners are part-timers vis-a-vis the full-time ones. That also talks to issues of affordability in terms of providing space, offices, and tools of trade that we may need to cater for from our budget, and also to offer flexibility, because most of our part-time commissioners are people who are running their law firms and law people. So it is a model that we are really looking at. We have discussed it at EXCO. We realized that this is what we've been doing for the past 20 years. We need to check if it's still working for us, looking at the amount allocated, and the efficiency target is that we allocate 40% of our cases to full-time, because that's what they can carry in terms of the volumes, and then 60% to our part-timers, but we are looking at readjusting those percentages and see if we can be able to improve efficiencies around that. And in terms of interpreters, we have absorbed all our part-time interpreters into our full-time staff establishment, so they are all full-time as we speak. And the member also raised a concern around the percentage of users that were not able to assist within the prescribed period. Mainly, when we looked into the reasons why we were unable to to do that, it will mainly be due to postponements, which is outside our control. Postponements are requested by the parties, and unfortunately we would have to grant that, given the valid reasons that they would provide. And where we have control, it's when the delay is as a result of our administrative processes, and in those cases we do take action, consequence management. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much to the CTMA. I think we are covered there, honourable members. So we move on to
one comment and follow up.
Just 1 minute, honourable Baker.
Thank you. Yes, well, I'm very pleased the interpreters have all become part on. I'm not knocking out sources, it does work. And I think that's what's kept you going in terms of your budget and in terms of your timing. I'm just saying that it's very different to what the rest of the department is doing. In terms of your affordability of mobile offices, I understand that, but I think you're going to have less affordability once the minimum wage comes in. So I don't know what you're going to do. Thanks.
I take it as a comment then, and we won't allow you to respond to that one. So we give to NetLeg. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Chair, and good afternoon to the honourable member. I will move straight to slide 5, performance the program on border 3. We have administration, the total annual planned indicators were 47 for the financial year under review. And for quarter three, we had 30 targets that were reporting on quarter three. And in terms of administration, we had 9 and we achieved 6, so that is 67%. And on core programs, we had 18 targets, we achieved 17, that's 94%. And on constituency capacity building funds, we had 3 and we achieved 3, which is 100%. And the summary of our performance for the quarter is 87%. I'll move to the next slide, which is, I'll just touch on those that we didn't meet the target. On slide 6, which is the next slide, we have under the third strategic objective there, which is improved risk management and financial oversight. We had 2 targets. We achieved 1. That means it's 50% achievement there. The reason is that we had challenges with our risk, the review of the risk register, which should be done on a quarterly basis. In certain units, that was not done. So as a result, we may have achieved over 80%, but because we didn't get 100% there, that's why we had 50%. The issue of facilities management, we do our inspections, and some of the matters that were raised in our inspections needed additional funding to implement, because we are in the process of trying to raise additional funds within the department as well as the National Treasury. We couldn't achieve that. And in terms of strengthening organizational culture and performance, that relates mainly to our HR performance. We had 0 there. That deals mainly with performance assessments of staff. There were staff members that were in the quarter that were on maternity leave that could not be assessed. And also, as a result of that, that was not achieved. The next slide, slide 7. The first strategic objective there, effective engagement on draft policy and legislation within the framework of the NetLeg Act, Constitution and Protocol. We had 12 targets there. We achieved 11. Only one was not achieved. That relates to the National Skills Development Plan, which was presented to NetLeg on the 27th of January 2017. It was supposed to be finalized in the third quarter, but it wasn't. It was only finalized. The report was signed off early this year in January, so we missed that target. I will then move to slide 9, which is talking to the financials, our income. We have a grant from the department. We have interest that we received, which is 430,000. Sundry income, money that we raised through selling of our furniture, obsolete furniture. The total was 32.4 million rand. So in terms of allocation, core programs, administration, which is program 1, was allocated 21.8 million. Program 2, which is core operations, was 6.4 million. And program 3, which is capacity building funds, 4.1 million. And the next slide is slide 11, that reports on the expenditure, financial expenditure at Nedlac. In terms of overall expenditure, we spend 24.3 million rand. In terms of compensation of employees, the annual target or budget is 13.9 million. We spent by the end of the third quarter 12.1 million. Goods and services 18.2. We've spent 12.1, and capital assets 200,000. We didn't spend anything in that quarter. And overall, basically, we have spent about 75% of the budget. Although in certain categories, we've spent more than we should have. I will then move to slide 15, which talks to program expenditure information. Just the percentage is there on program 1. By the end of the third quarter, we had spent 76%, and program 2, by the end of the third quarter, we had spent 94%. And the main reason why we had spent 94% in that quarter instead of 75% was a result of our activities, national minimum wage activities and other related activities, for example, comprehensive social security, which was not necessarily budgeted for in that quarter, and we continued to try and raise additional funds from the department. It will emerge in when we report for quarter four that indeed we got additional funding from the department to offset the over expenditure that we incurred in that particular program. And in program 3, that is capacity building funds, we're sitting at 41% instead of 75%. The main reason is that the constituencies mainly spend their budget in the last quarter, their capacity building budget in the last quarter. And it will also be reported in the next quarter that we actually spend more than that, almost 100% of the budget. Thank you very much, Chair. I would like to stop there.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Members, we are now doing it, so are you clear? I don't see any aim. Honorable Mashine?
The Chair is just a general comment, Chair, that may apply to all of them. You know is that for any non-compliance or non-performance, there is always 1,000 reasons to explain why you have not done a thing. But the fact of the matter is the thing has not been done and people are suffering because of that. You may raise 1,000 reasons and explain yourself and make us heavy, you know, on the significance of the reasons that you think why that has not been done. But deep in your heart, speak to the consequence of that has not happened, that you're supposed to do. Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mashile. I take that as a comment. So I want to thank the entity for this presentation, and we give over to Productivity SA.
Good day, Chairperson and Honorable Members. We provided you with a volume in terms of slides, but I'm going to be very specific in terms of focusing on quarter three. I'll guide the committee through the respective slides. If you go to slide 13, we are providing you performance type program. And here in particular, just to reflect that we had quarter three, 17 planned indicators, and we achieved 13, which put us at 76%. And then there are areas where we have indicated the lower than 100% performance. That is in marketing and communications at 75%, productivity, organizational solutions, 67%, value chain competitiveness, 75%, and turnaround solutions program, 50%. And I'll explain the issues that has to do with that. On slide 14, we're giving you a progression in terms of performance starting from quarter one, quarter two, quarter three. If you look at quarter one, you would realize that there's some level of non-improvement as we compare to the previous financial year. But in quarter two, we moved to 68, and as I indicated in quarter three, we are at 76. Now what we have done is to summarize the areas that relates to marketing and communications, productivity, organizational solutions, value chain competitiveness, and turnaround solutions. We have summarized them in slide number 11. Instead of the committee having to go through the voluminous document, we have identified four areas of non-performance as they relate to the areas that are indicated. But I think it's important that at this point I should respond to the issue raised by Honorable Mashile about, are you satisfied with 76% as compared to having done certain things? And I want to be specific about three areas. If you look at slide 14, where we have POS, this is the support that we provide for enterprises, particularly small enterprises, so that they can be competitive and be able to retain employment as well as create employment. In this quarter, we have done badly in that area. So it means lesser enterprises were supported during that period of time. Although if you look at quarter one, quarter two, up to quarter three, mm-hmm. at quarter three we had already achieved the target year to date, but in that particular quarter, very minimal was done. And the challenge here is, because of our structure, we only operate fully in the Western Cape, in KwaZulu-Natal, as well as in Gauteng. And most of those provinces where we don't have a footprint are actually underserviced, which is a problem. So if you look at 2018-19, we're talking about increasing our footprint, but because of financial constraints, it's still going to be difficult. The next area that is value chain competitiveness, the challenge there is that this program is what we call Workplace Challenge Program. And that has to do with competitiveness of
enterprises, particularly those that are on the, they're supported by the DTI. And if you look at the competitiveness of these countries per the workplace, as per the World Economic Forum competitiveness report, one cannot claim any impact that we're making. So there's a serious gap that we still have to do more in that area. In the Turnaround Solutions program, I think I've been here for almost 2 years. Each year I'm talking about our inability to service enterprises that are retrenching because we do not receive funding in full or on time as is to be transferred from the unemployment insurance fund. And here you're talking about workers who are losing jobs. But if you can't protect them, you then run a serious risk of actually rolling them to the social security system. And if you count the numbers behind one worker, you talk about particularly African workers, it's just a serious problem. We have had a serious engagement with the board to the extent that because of funding, and we're picking up issues of that if we spend without funding, we're actually going to incur regular expenditure. And then over and above that, because we source services from service providers, particularly experts in turnaround solutions, as I'm sitting, we're picking up legal costs because they're claiming they have performed, we can't afford to pay them. If you look at slide 11, as I indicated, to give the committee assurance that marketing and communication is linked to slide 26 in the text, that is 1.2. The issue there was just that because of the work that we do, we rely on partnerships, particularly around small enterprise funding agencies, because you are able to source enterprises that are not able to service loans. And once they are not able to service loans, it means there's a potential that they are having operational challenges for the next retrenching workers. So the reason there is to ensure that at least they can provide us with a list of enterprises which have a potential for retrenchment, then we can intervene immediately. That is why also with NAFCO, because they are dealing mostly with small enterprises, that's our source of clientele. We have not, as at quarter three, finalized the MOA, but I can safely report that we have finally signed the MOA and we have started the collaboration two structures. Under productivity organizational solutions, that number two is linked to 1.16, that is slide 30 in the presentation. In that regard, our deviation was just 186, and we have been able to, as at quarter four, we're able to recoup, and we have actually performed in terms of the standard that we set. Under value chain competitiveness, the work that we do there is around, as you empower enterprises, you also empower workers, for them to be able to continue engaging on productivity and competitiveness issues. So some of those workshops that we had planned, we could not achieve that. And we then looked at that and said we should wrap up performance in the fourth quarter. But again, in terms of year-to-date target, we had already achieved almost 212 against the target of 200 in that sense. So I'm comfortable that at the end of the financial year, we actually achieved that target. And as I indicated, in terms of turnaround solutions under number four, unfortunately, the board had to take a decision that we should suspend the program. And that has serious implications for the beneficiaries. However, on the 20th
of April, the board had a meeting with the minister, and the minister gave a directive that the funds should be transferred as of the 18-19 financial year. I'm looking forward to the funds being transferred. The last slide that I would like to take the committee through is slide 43, which talks to the finances of productivity essay, just to indicate that in terms of the slide number 43.
Slide number 43.
It is over there, which means the department received it. I don't know what happened. Chairperson, apologies that that slide, that the subsequent slides are not reflected. However, just to indicate, as we have on the board there, in terms of revenue, our budget was 140 million as at quarter three, and the actual that we were able to generate is only 92, and the reason we're giving that is precisely because we did not receive funding as expected in terms of the turnaround solutions program. And that immediately had the spin-offs in terms of spending. That our budget in terms of expenditure was 135 in terms of programs, and we could only spend 91 million, which leaves us with a deficit or a variance of 43 million. And I should indicate, year on year, this has implications for financial sustainability of the entity, or what we refer as a going concern. Immediately that you don't have funding for programs, then you have also workers, in terms of productivity essay workers, not having salaries in effect, and the board is looking at various options. One possibility is retrenchment, which is put on the table.
Thanks, honourable members. Any questions? Honourable Bakken or America or Mashile, that works, please.
Thanks, I'll be quick. All this is all very well, but in reality it's a talk shop, isn't it? And that's really the services that are being delivered. I'm not seeing all that much coming out of that other than the talk shop. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with my colleague. There's nothing inspiring about this presentation. I want to know, how many jobs were saved in the third quarter? Did we save any jobs? And that's the fundamental problem, because so many of our people are unemployed. And then lastly, Madam Chair, is that one recognized sometimes the financial challenges an entity may have to execute its mandate. But as you would recall, last year, there were serious financial challenges as a result of misappropriation of funds, corruption, and we were promised that the matter would be fully investigated. Now, the question is, was the matter investigated? Were the employees suspended? Has the report been finalized? When are we going to get an update with regard to that financial sort of misconduct of employees that was recognized last year? Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Honourable America, Honourable Mashile.
The chairperson, on slide 7, We are told that in the absence of further funding from the UIF, that the UIF is here. Is here. The department is here. What is the problem? Because we have, I'm sure we have heard from the UIF, and then they have clearly stated their positions, what they are doing, and we did not hear that they have got a problem of transferring funds to you, but you have got a problem of not receiving funds from them. What's the problem? Are you not talking to each other? Or is there a Berlin Wall between you two? What's the story? You can just get that explanation.
Thank you, Honorable Mashile. I think from my side, just is we note that previously we've continuously asked for the financial report to be included in the presentation, and we want to welcome it that you indeed adhere to the request now. Even though we are not privy to the information beforehand, but indeed you try to adhere to that. So can you respond to the question that's been asked?
If I were to talk to the first issue about talk shop, I think in the presentation we've tried to indicate the mandate and why are we servicing this country. That is self-explanatory. The second question was about have you saved any jobs? In the presentation, we have indicated that 7,600 jobs were saved during this period. On the forensic investigation, yes, the forensic investigation was finalized. We received the report in April. The report was tabled before the board on the 21st of May, and we're actioning the forensic investigation report. I would imagine at the right time we'll be able to indicate what has been done, but just to indicate that indeed there have been consequences in terms of areas where there was maladministration. Are we talking about funding? Yes, we are. To the extent that this letter was escalated to the minister, the letter indicated the minister on the 20th of April gave a directive that all matters relating to funding for productivity assessment should be finalized by the end of May. Thank you, sir.
Are we covered in terms of the responses, members? Yes, ma'am. Does it seem so, Honorable American, then Honorable Mashile?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the update with regard to the forensic investigation. It is heartening to know that indeed something came of it, as you have promised us last year. With regard to the number of jobs, the number indicated in the presentation is the number of jobs to save since the beginning of the financial year. My question specifically related to how many jobs saved in the third quarter of this year and not since the beginning of the financial year. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, I do understand the issue that the minister said XYZ. Surely if Productivity SA expect transfers from UIF, there is something that informs that they must expect funding from UIF, and they are not getting it, then they have spoken to the minister. But now, let alone the process to the minister, what is an explanation of the UIF of not transferring the money to you? If there is an expectation that UIF must transfer the money to you, when you speak to them, what is their excuses of not making that transfer? Because when you look at the report of UIF, There is no way where they speak about transfers to productivity as a on page 21. They're not speaking about transfers to you. Now, what informs you that you must expect money from UIF? If it is a legal issue that they must transfer the money, when you ask them, what is their excuse? And when you have, I may not be knowing chair because I'm a newling in this area. You may have discussed this long ago, but I'm in the dark. I've got two institutions in front of me. One expects money from the other one. And it's a crisis. But then I'm not getting any understanding why the other one is not transferring the money. What is the reason given? Thanks.
I think, Honorable Mashile, we note your question. And as the presenter rightfully said, that the matter has been alleviated to the minister. So I would like, while UIF is present, can they give us some short insight into this matter, if they can? If you are not able to do that now, then I'll prefer that you respond by a written response, but we need to hear from you what is actually happening in order for us, when we go to the fourth quarter, to we want to see this thing to be resolved, because it can't be a year-on-year thing. Every year, every quarter, this entity is complaining about they don't receive money. UIF, are you in a position to respond now?
Chairperson, may we be allowed to submit a written response detailing the challenges that informs the non-transference of the money?
It's agreed upon. We accept it. We'll then request those responses to arrive before the end of business on Friday. Is it enough time?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Are we clear on those issues, Honorable Members? Can we move forward? At this stage, we are done with the department and its entities, so we want to thank you for your availability, for the presentation, and for assisting us in terms of the responses. You may feel free to be excused if you want to. We're going to move forward, Honorable Members. We're just going to give 2 minutes stretch break and then we proceed.
Yeah.
Can we start, members? We have in front of us honorable members. We have the quarter two, second quarterly performance report of the department and its entity. It has been distributed to all the members. I hope we look through it. We'll remember that it has been presented to the committee and it was sent back to include some recommendations and observations, and it has been included now in the final report on page 12 and 13. So are we satisfied that that report can be submitted? I'm noting hands, honourable members. In the absence of any amendments, I'll request a mover and a seconder for the adoption of the report. The Honourable Tongwani is moving. The Honourable Teko is seconding. Thank you very much. Then we have the outstanding draft minutes in front of us, starting on the 17th of April. Do we have it in front of us?
Yeah.
It's also been circulated to us, 17th of April. Do we have a mover? Honourable America is moving. The Honourable Teko is seconding. Adopted. Then we have the 18th of April. Do we have a mover? The Honourable Bagram is moving. The Honourable Tongwani is seconding. Adopted. Then the next one is the 19th of April. The Honourable America is moving. The Honourable Tongwani is seconding. Then we have the 20th of April. The Honourable Bagram is moving. The Honourable Teko is seconding. Adopted. 21st of April. We have the Honourable America moving. We have the Honourable Tongwani seconding. That's it for now. Please take note, honourable members, that there's still a lot of minutes outstanding. It will be circulated to us in due course. Then we are going to the last point of on our agenda, and that is the draft program, committee program. We'll give over to the committee secretary just to give us a glimpse on that. No, what we are doing, we have adopted the program. We'll know that we've adopted it, but there are certain things that we didn't take into consideration. So I've just requested the committee secretary just to bring it in front of us, what we've agreed on and what is the current challenges that we are faced with. Mr. Sakasa.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to bring to the attention of the members that we had some slight changes due to the bill that was prioritized, the three bills that had to be prioritized. So some of the items that were in the program had to be shifted around. I think that's what Chair wants us to bring the committee to speak. For instance, today we just did the quarterly performance report of quarter three which was apparently had to be done in the previous week, the 16th, when we have the bills. So it had to be moved to this. Now, in that movement of that item, it had an effect on the next coming weeks. For instance, also there is this possibility that some members will be going on the International Labour Organization conference. So it is we're not sure yet what is going to happen with the next 2 weeks. So on the 30th, we had on the program an action plan of the compensation fund, and on the 6th of June we were supposed to have the labour activation program, and we also had the 13th of June, where the committee agreed to call upon the Department of Labour and the Department of Trade and Industry to investigate the issues around the horse racing grooms. So they have been called in. If the committee will remember, the committee said within a month they must come before the committee. So the 13th of June will be that presentation report. Thank you. It might stop there, because the parliament will apparently rise on the 15th of June. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Sakasa. Just to for us to take note, honourable members, that Parliament will rise on the 15th. So which means if we going to skip the next 2 weeks, if the approval doesn't go through for members to attend the ILO conference, then it's fine, then we'll proceed as normal. But if we're not going to be able to meet due to the members who's going to leave for the ILO conference, then it means that we'll have that week of the 13th, that will be a committee week, Mrs. Sakasa. So we have that option of meeting one or two full days during that week. Then I'm sure we will be able to catch up with our committee work. Can I get a review of the committee? Honorable America.
Just a question, Madam Chair. What's tardiness of the approval process? Because it impacts upon our ability to plan our program. It isn't rocket science to decide whether you approve or not.
Thank you, Honorable America. What has been approved is the speaker's grant permission, and then the political approval also went through. What lies now ahead is the financial approval that hasn't been finished. So we can't do anything unless that is finished. So we have to wait. Unfortunately, there's a lot of signatures that needs to go through. We have to. But for members' interest, three members were allowed to attend. So it would be two ANC members being led by the acting chairperson. So the Honorable Tongwani will be going, as well as one DA member. So the Honorable America was identified to go and will be accompanied by one staff member. So that's how the current state of affairs is. So I think what we need to agree upon, Honorable Members, that if everything went according to plan and the approval is granted by the end of business on Friday, which I'm sure it might go through. So if everything goes through, then we need to agree that we meet at least 2 days, the 13th and the 14th, or the 13th and the 12th of June, to finalize our committee work. But then it would mean that it will be all day session. So if we can just get a view on that one, then we give everything to the administrator for them to deal with the logistics. The Honorable Teko?
Chair, I want to check something. Are we not correcting while we are away? So if there are issues that we can deal with, if we can remain and the committee meetings can continue as normal. Because I don't think three people can just make the committee not to meet. I don't know.
There's a proposal, Honorable Members, that in the absence of those three members, the committee can still proceed.
I would second that.
Okay. Then it's agreed upon. It will be business as usual. We'll just get an acting chairperson, acting chairperson, and an acting secretary. Then it's fine. Then committee business can proceed as usual. Then we stick to, we just request the staff then, or the committee secretary, to make the necessary arrangements, but also to give to us the revised program, so that we know what's on the agenda. So with that in mind, I think it's fine. It's agreed upon, the revised program. Then the other thing is, honourable members, we've received communication from the woman on farms on one member of the committee, if it can be the acting chairperson, to attend their summit on the 29th. I've requested the committee secretary to send the communication through to all the members and request a volunteer, and no one responded. Can we safely say that there's no one available to attend that summit? It's in the Western Cape, it's in Paarl on the 29th.
They send someone else with their meetings.
We can't send someone in that have to agree on that person in their absence.
On that one drama.
No, it's not fair. So can we safely then give an indication then that there won't be anyone? Honorable Mashile?
No. Chair, you're speaking about the 29th, and we're still going to meet around the 13th or 14th. Can we finalize it on that particular day? Maybe certain things may have been...
It's next week, Tuesday.
Oh, next week, Tuesday.
29 May.
Oh, 29th of May.
The one day.
Yeah, it's the one. Sorry? It's the one. It's not an off day for people. Okay, that's why we requested a volunteer. Are you volunteering, Honorable Korai? Or is it agreed upon?
I want to ask to volunteer. What are the logistics of transport?
No, don't touch your arms.
We can arrange that. Yes, so it's agreed upon, the Honorable Korai will be
available in the woman.
So we will do the necessary logistical arrangements, and then we'll proceed. On the other issue, Honorable Members. Yeah, there's other communication also. Honorable members, I would like to request you to go through your communication that's been sent to the via the secretary and respond to it, because you're making it extremely difficult for us to make decisions if you're not responding, because sometimes there's no need for us to bring things to the formal committee, but we need some kind of direction from the committee members. So there's the other issue of other groomers associations heard about this people that made presentations, and now they also want to come to the committee. Honorable Begram?
Look, I think that we can have millions of organizations come to us, and they're coming with their labor and legal problems to this committee, and that's not the duty of this committee. I'm not sure what we saw them in the first place. And I'm not going to come to that second meeting when they're giving, because they can go to a trade union and have it sorted out. If the trade union can't sort it out, then lawyers will. But it's not for us to sort those issues out. They wanted to get a proper union. They wanted to get proper legal advice. And I think it's ridiculous. Otherwise, we're opening ourselves out. I can send you millions. My office gets about 100 a day of these things. I can send it on to the committee, but I think it's reckless for us to even entertain it.
No, it's agreed. That's exactly my point of view, including all the other letters that I'm receiving from interested community members who want to come and speak. I just respond to them that they have the relevant structures that they can make use of, and we also refer it to the department. So that's that. So the last item is not my competency. Tongwani proposed closure, and the Honorable Martins agree. meeting adjourned. Can I just request the ANC members to stay behind?
I did want to object. The ruling party must remain.
The ruling party must remain.
But how have we identified America to go to Switzerland? I think the ILO thing. You're moving America to Switzerland and make it one country.
Oh, that was not for you. That was not for you.